This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is all theater. This is all just political theater.
Political theater. Political theater.
Pure political
theater.
Theater.
Political theater.
The nefarious,
significant, and protracted
political theater for political theater's sake.
I yield back.
From Washington, this is Political Theater. Roll Call's review of the spectacle of politics on Capitol Hill and across the country. I'm Jason Dick.
The State of the Union is unruly and never boring. It seems as if the State of the Union, just as we're ready to write it off as just another exercise in, pardon the expression, political theater, it actually surprises us. And such was the case this week when Joe Biden gave his second State of the Union address, his third address, although that first one never counts, the one in 2021, just an address to a joint state of joint session of Congress, but this was Joe Biden's annual delivery of the State of the Union, and we saw quite a bit. It is easy to say like this is just another speech for the president to give, but we had some stuff going on, and we have two of our finest here at CQ Roll Call to talk about it. Our chief correspondent Niels Lesniewski. Hello, Niels.
Hello.
And Jim Saxa, our features writer and expert on all things Marjorie Taylor Greene. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Niels, let's start with you. I mean, one of the things that everybody noted, including the two of you in your stories for Roll Call, there was a lot of back and forth between the president and Republicans in the chamber. And, you know, this was definitely a new kind of thing. Had the pleasure of just his own party in the majorities the first couple of years of his presidency, and he has to deal with a divided Congress now with Kevin McCarthy as Speaker and the Republicans in the majority in the House. But we'll get to that, you know, some of that back and forth that we saw at the State of the Union. But Niels, one of the things that you have noticed in the last few months is that perhaps because the White House knew that this was not going to be some genteel Bob Michael-like Republican conference in the House, that they were going to perhaps need to be a little bit more aggressive. And you've seen some of that in your reporting and the approach in the White House. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I think it leads right into what we saw at the State of the Union on Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's right. The White House has been fairly unabashed in its criticism, particularly of elements of the House Republican conference. They have not at all shied away in the press operation, and the president himself, frankly, in referring to the MAGA Republican subset of the House. They have dedicated considerable press office resources both to having a separate press operation associated with the White House counsel's office to both deal with the questions related to the documents and to deal with the questions that frankly are part and parcel of having a House Republican majority with committees that are set up largely to investigate the Biden administration, Hunter Biden, other scandals or not. And so they're sort of have staffed up to deal with that. They've been aggressive about trying to make their case. And the State of the Union was in a large measure, intentionally or not, I don't think we fully know exactly how much they were trying to bait them last night, but a means of responding to that element of the Republican conference.
And Jim, I mean, you were in our seat in the gallery there last night. I mean, on television, which is how most people, you know, see this speech, because they don't, you know, they don't really get to fill the relatively small confines, friendly confines of the House chamber, even though it does fit quite a few people for one of these things. But it was, it seemed that it might have been even a little rowdier, you know, than we saw on TV, because, you know, some of that gets muffled. Talk a little bit about that, like the sense, you know, like at a, almost like a, being at a, almost like a wrestling match or something.
Yeah. It definitely was louder there. I actually watched the speech again this morning on YouTube, and yeah, you did not hear half of the heckles and grumblings from the Republican side. You also didn't hear a lot of the cheering and sort of a call and response type things that the Democrats were saying. There are a couple of amens and hallelujahs and that's right, it's being shouted from members of the squad. But it was definitely rowdier. You also didn't see on TV the look of Republicans' faces as Biden was delivering his remarks. You could see them respond afterwards as the Democrats rose to clap, maybe. But there was a lot of eye rolls, a lot of really demonstrative behavior throughout. And Biden decided, like his team must have expected this, because it wasn't the first time. I mean, in 2009 with Joe Wilson shouting, "You lie," that became the story, right? We all just focused on the lack of the quorum. But the last couple of years, there's been a lot more jawing from both sides, to be fair. The Democrats booed Trump a few times, and most famously, Nancy Pelosi tore up part of his speech afterwards. But it's gotten more and more, and I think they went in expecting it. I think they sort of goaded the Republicans' most outspoken, let's say, members, the ones that desperately want attention at all time, you know, to do what they do best, which is act childish. And I think it, you know, worked. I think it made Biden seem sharp. I think it made him seem like the adult in the room, which is what they said going into this, the White House said they wanted to do. And it made Republicans seem, like they weren't serious about governing.
There was a point in the speech where I forget what exactly Biden had said, but it prompted several Republicans to yell out "border," and I couldn't help but think, "Oh, this—that almost sounds like in the House of Commons in Britain, the old speaker, the previous speaker, who would, you know, have this very, you know, sort of luxurious sounding order." And I think that, you know, some people have commented that, like, this is almost like, are we heading towards a situation where it's like prime minister's questions? Now, granted, prime ministers have to deal with this every week, not once a year. So they get used to the, you know, thrust and parry of the way that they're questioned. But this does seem like an escalation and perhaps like something that you don't put the genie back in the bottle at this point. Niels, one thing that occurred to me is that, you know, one thing that is, you know, was said of Bill Clinton, you know, as he, you know, got, you know, wiped out in the midterms in 1994 after, you know, his first midterm, that he was blessed with good enemies and that helped him cruise to reelection. Right now, it seems like in some ways Joe Biden is running almost against Rick Scott, the former NRSC chairman and former governor of Florida, who is now the junior senator from Florida, for, you know, proposing legislation to reauthorize Social Security and Medicare every 5 years. And this, you know, this was one of the moments when, you know, when Biden mentioned this, that the, you know, like the this plan that Marjorie Taylor Greene, there's that name again, she said, you're lying. I think it was, is that what it was that she said? Or it wasn't you lie. That would have been just liar. Too much of an echo. Yeah. Liar.
Liar. Yeah.
But it seems like, Joe Biden just couldn't be happier than to just keep mentioning Rick Scott's plan for the federal government that he unveiled as NRSC chairman.
Yeah, yes. In fact, the president sometimes carries around a copy of Senator Scott's plan to remind people that it exists. And it's funny because, as we know, when Rick Scott attempted to become the Senate Republican leader, he got walloped.
Yep.
He actually ran against Mitch McConnell for leader for this Congress, and that vote was not particularly close. So it is perhaps instructive that the president sees Senator Scott of Florida, not to be confused with Senator Scott of South Carolina, one or both of whom may be running for president, that the president sees Senator Scott of Florida as an exceptionally good foil in a way that, quite frankly, Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy are not really. That the way that the president is embracing this idea of playing off of these other Republicans, because to use your comparison to the Clinton years, Newt Gingrich was actually the speaker. Right. This is a different situation where the people who are the actual Republican leaders are not the ones that the president is going to be sparring with all that often. The other thing that I'm reminded of looking back is the year that President Obama went to the House Republican retreat and did a Q&A session with them. If I'm Joe Biden, I don't know if this is actually well advised or not, but I might be inviting myself to a House Republican meeting and inviting in the TV cameras, because this is probably exactly what Kevin McCarthy wouldn't want to see happen. But it seems that the president is well positioned for tangling with some of these folks.
And Jim, to Niels's point about McCarthy in particular, Democrats have had a fun time in the last few decades, sort of demonizing Mitch McConnell as, the Grim Reaper and all these other kind of things, and made him a villain when it's been convenient, especially when he's the majority leader. McCarthy seems as far away in temperament from McConnell as you can get. I mean, he seems very eager to engage with people as a politician. And that seemed, just in the limited view that we had from television, like McCarthy couldn't help but smile, at the president and shake his hand, and also looked visibly uncomfortable. Like he might've had to go to the bathroom when the cat calls were starting from his side.
Yeah. And you can compare that to McConnell, who, even when the president, called him out early in the speech to tip his cap at how long he's been leading his party in the Senate, the longest ever, barely smiled, barely like did anything. He didn't stand. He was sphinx-like the entire time. And you could tell, actually, a lot of the Republican leadership were trying to emulate more McConnell style. It was really the backbenchers that were doing the yelling. The border you heard, it was actually Secure the Border. And Eli Crane, a freshman from Arizona, who is a strong MAGA Republican who has questioned Biden's election validity in the past. He was one of the people leading that. And it was twice. First time Biden was talking about immigration in general, and then the second time he just told the story of Doug Griffin, who lost his daughter to a fentanyl overdose. Really like moving stuff. A part of every president does this since Reagan, but uses people in the crowd that they've invited to illustrate the problems that all Americans face, or the solutions that they have delivered as politicians. But, you know, delivering this moving stuff, and then, you know, they respond by yelling and heckling. And again, this gets to my earlier point. Like, I think that's going to blow back in the GOP's face, and they're going to get, the entire party is going to get painted by that one brush. And the elder statesmen knew that, and I think are pretty upset about it, just reading the body language and hearing some of the statements afterwards come out. You know, McCarthy did say, you know, chided his party on Fox News this morning for being so boisterous.
Well, and it also just, if, you know, it, again, I was, you know, watching it, I guess, you know, yeah, there is the, it's just a weird chance, secure the border. I mean, it's like a lot. I mean, like it doesn't have the punch of liar or you lie. It's almost like somebody who tries to start the wave, you know, at a baseball game, and it just fails. Other people are like, no, we're not going to do that. It's just,
I mean, it was probably more lively than most baseball games I've gone to. So definitely a lot of people trying to start chants and failing. And yeah, I think, it sort of highlights again that the GOP lacks a lot of unity right now. You know, they are broadly aligned on certain policy goals, but truly on strategy and tactics right now, they seem to be pretty divergent.
And one term we did not hear the president use, Niels, even though he did seem to be in his sort of Irish fighter mode, if you will, last night, he did not use the term MAGA.
No, and there was a conscious decision, interestingly, to not call out Marjorie Taylor Greene, here we go again, to not call out those people by name. And so it was fascinating that they were sort of elevating themselves. But the president was, and the speechwriters clearly had decided not to do the elevating in their own right. The other thing that, you know, when I found out that it was in fact Eli Crane, who had been one of the hecklers, that's a fascinating point for me, because I was probably one of the first national reporters who actually saw Mr. Crane in action during that primary in Arizona. And his existence in Congress is an outgrowth of redistricting. So when you talk about how people come to be members of Congress, that was the old Tom O'Halloran seat represented by a Democrat that got moved very far in the Trump direction when it was redistricted. And so it's pretty much a safe Republican seat now, but that is sort of how you have someone who can emerge as a freshman and be immediately one of the people who is engaging with the president like that, is that this isn't a situation where someone has to work their way up sort of in stature. They walk into a safe Republican seat that was newly created.
And if I'm not mistaken, some parts of my hometown in Arizona were moved into that you know, O'Halloran, now Crane district, in the Verde Valley, Cottonwood, Sedona, you know, parts of that that were previously represented by Paul Gosar. So it became a much more Republican district in redistricting, even with, you know, an independent redistricting commission. But, you know, this is always the first election after redistricting always gives us a very diverse cast of characters that we don't necessarily get midstream in the decade. So, Jim, this was, you know, this is again the first time since the pandemic started that Republicans have been in the majority for the State of the Union for this presidential address. Again, I went to a joint address last year when Volodymyr Zelensky spoke. Nobody's wearing masks. No one is. I mean, very much it seems like we are past this. But it was, was it odd to be just in that? That's probably the biggest event, you know, even like, because, you know, with even the day that the Congress convened, you know, the Republicans said that they were going to open up the place more than the Democrats had. So we just have more people. And then this was the first address. Talk about how crowded it was for this, even with all the enhanced security that the Secret Service and Capitol Police accounted for, like erecting fences around the campus.
Yeah, it's the most crowded I've seen the Capitol in my 4 years, covering Congress. Although a large chunk of that was during the pandemic. In the upstairs hallways, right outside the galleries, you couldn't move your shoulder to shoulder. I saw maybe, less than a handful of masks, and they were all on pretty obviously older invitees who, you know, we can assume are particularly susceptible to COVID problems. I don't recall, there might have been one member, one Democrat wearing a mask, and that was it. And I couldn't tell you who. Because
they're wearing a mask.
Yeah. it was packed to the gunnels and, difficult to move around, before and after, the speech. And then, the other thing is, the speech was bookended by parties, right? There are receptions, the hallways had that, were filled with that indistinct smell of, steno warmed catered food, like there's wafts of bad crab cakes in the air. I know the House GOP leadership, they had a dinner beforehand at one of local hotels, and there are a bunch of events afterwards. That also probably plays a role. We can safely assume that half of the members of Congress were half in the bag. So maybe that's why they're so boisterous.
By the way, gunnels, excellent word. Word of the podcast.
Thank you.
And then Niels, the president is doing what presidents often do after these States of the Union. He goes on the road and talks about how great he is and how great the programs are and so forth. And he's in Wisconsin as we're recording this, and he's heading to Florida later. He's doing all kinds
of stuff. He's going to – it's almost like they knew how this was going to play out with this whole Rick Scott thing, because they set up a – Thursday event in Tampa to talk about protecting Social Security. So, it just works out perfectly that it happens to be not all that far up the road from Mr. Scott's home base in Naples on Thursday. It seems like they rigged it, and, it seems to be playing out exactly as they intended.
That would explain the higher number of Rick Scott releases I have in my email queue today. I think we're going to hear something about Biden's taxes, I think, is the retort or something like that. And I think they dug up some quote from 1995, when Biden was talking about something about Social Security and Medicare, about freezing it or something like that, 20, almost 30 years old quotes. This is going to get lively. All right, well, gents, thank you so much for your work. I know it was a late night for both of you. I appreciate you debriefing on this, giving an inside and outside view of the State of the Union and where we go from here. And let's keep at it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
And thank you for listening out there. If you have liked what you heard about this podcast, or even if you don't like what you hear, subscribe anyway. We could use more subscribers. Go to our website at rollcall.com and sign up for our newsletter. It's delivered every week in your inbox after we pop these things out on iTunes, Stitcher, NPR One, Google Play, all those kind of platforms where you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening.